Today is Friday, February 23rd, the year 2001. We're in East Lansing, Michigan. I'm Jeff Charney, along with Dr. Christine Birdwell, interviewing Kenneth Beechler for the MSU Oral History Project for the Sesquicentennial. Mr. Beechler, you can see we've got a tape recorder here. Do you give us permission to record this interview?
Yes, of course.
Okay. I'd like to start first with some questions about your personal and professional background. Where did you grow up and where did you go to high school?
I grew up in eastern Michigan in the Mount Clemens area, and then pretty much in the Ionia-Belding-Greenville area near Grand Rapids. I consider myself a West Michigan native. My parents built a new home between Belding and Greenville when I was a sophomore in high school, and I just could not go to Greenville for my last 2 years, so I stayed in Belding. My younger brother, who was 4 years younger, graduated Greenville, so we're a split family.
What year did you graduate high school?
1953.
Mm-hmm. What did you do after you graduated from high school?
I knew when I graduated high school that I was going to Chicago to study privately singing and theater and ultimately dance. These were letters of introduction by my high school singing teacher. And because I knew that, I did not really do a college preparatory curriculum. I specialized in extracurricular activities my last 2 years of high school. I did go to Interlaken, which changed my life. It let me know that I wasn't the only baritone soloist in the world. It prepared me a little bit more for Chicago, but I had planned to be a professional actor, and that was it. So I went to Chicago to get underway. 2 years after I was in Chicago, I auditioned all the time. I took music theory, music harmony from my vocal coach. I coached with her twice a week, vocally, plus my harmony and music theory lessons. I had a singing lesson every Sunday evening at WGN-TV, and I had acting classes three times a week to begin with, ultimately every day. And I didn't start out with dance. I added an interpretive dance. I studied at the Fine Arts Building on North Michigan Avenue in Chicago. I heard about Northwestern University, but I wasn't really interested in that. And also, some of my teachers also taught at Goodman Theater, but I was told to avoid that because it was the rubber stamp school of acting that Goodman taught, and besides, they were passe. So I never thought too much about Goodman Theater until the last 15 years when they're so great. So 2 years after I auditioned all the time. My second year and into my third year, I was on tour with a show for school assemblies for 9 months. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was about time I started getting paid for all of the money I'd invested in lessons. I turned 20 on the road. I went out at 19.
If you go back to, who was your high school drama teacher that was influential?
I didn't really have a drama teacher in the high school. They passed that around as to who would be directing productions in the gymnasium with a stage on one side. I had, I think, a very influential band director, Raymond Kindig, whom I still see. He lives in Owosso, and his wife, Barbara, was our choral director for only 1 year, but they both imprinted on me a great love of music, and I keep telling them that today, and they're very proud they come to Lansing and see some of our productions.
Mm-hmm. And what was Interlaken like in the early 1950s?
It was just as it began. Dr. Joseph Maddy was roaming around the campus. It was all his. He was the king, and I actually did Allstate, but 2 weeks of vocal coaching, as I said, changed my life. I thought if I ever were going to go to college, I certainly would go to the University of Michigan because most of the vocal faculty was from U of M. I also had been a cheerleader in high school, and there were, I think, three of us guys and maybe three women, and we would go to Ann Arbor for cheerleading clinics because they were all men, but they did gymnastics and tumbling, and they taught us funny songs about MSU. I knew I'd never be here. Moo, moo, MSU, where the cows roam the campus all day, where seldom is heard an intelligent word. and the athletes all get high pay. That to the tune of a home run the range.
Okay.
So I was very, very pro U of M, but I didn't think I was going there. And I didn't have any bad feelings about Michigan State. As a matter of fact, Michigan State was very much in our family's conscience because of the extension service.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was involved in, you know, in the small towns in Michigan. That was Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
So I was 3.5 years in Chicago, including the 9 months on tour. I was back home briefly for some minor surgery. The draft was certainly on. I was 21. I had turned 20 on the road. I went back into summer stock at Marengo, Illinois that summer, and back into classes in the fall. I was home that fall around Thanksgiving. I had some minor surgery. I'm recuperating, and I thought the draft is hanging over my head. Maybe I should enlist and get it over with, and then I'll go to New York, thinking that since I've been out on the road, I probably had gotten all Chicago could teach me. At 21, you have a very inflated ego, and I had no reason to doubt it. I had wonderful teachers in Chicago. I had two different acting teachers. It actually, though, was my... I had two singing teachers in high school, privately. It was my second singing teacher who had had the experience of studying in Chicago, auditioning for Rodgers and Hammerstein in New York, and it was she who put me on the trajectory to go to Chicago and then on to New York.
And who was that?
Her name was Geraldine Brocker.
Your Army career, how did you, what happened in that?
Well, I went to all the recruiters and found out that the Navy was 4 years, the Air Force was 4 years. I didn't touch the Marines. I didn't think I was Marine material. The Army said, we've got several different programs. We've got a 6-year program, and I thought, oh, Lord. But they said it's 2 years of active duty and 4 years of reserve service. Regular Army is 3 years enlistment. You probably still have a reserve obligation. 6 years is always sort of the... And the Air Force said 4 years active duty plus some reserve time. And I thought, well, actually, if I did the Army 2 years active duty and the 4 years I knew there'd be an obligation, I could probably go to New York and drill at a reserve center in New York, and it would be a little income. So I took the Army. I discussed it with my parents. I'd already signed the papers, but I went home and asked them what they thought. And the bottom line was they thought that maybe I should wait. So I said, well, I can't. I'm leaving in 2 weeks. And then I had to tell my teachers in Chicago that I was taking 2 years off. And they were very nice, although disappointed, because I didn't realize at that time that whether or not it's a university teacher or a private teacher, they have invested time, talent, interest, and encouragement in you, and they don't like you all of a sudden to say, I'm going to go do something else for a while, but I'll be back. You can wait for me, you know. But I did that 6 months after I was in the Army, after basic training at Fort Carson, Colorado. The Army, as it said, the military always trained you for the last war they fought. So I went out to Fort Carson, Colorado in January of 1957 and did cold winter training just like they used in Korea, which was pretty much drawn down by that time, but it's before Vietnam. I then went to signal school at Fort Gordon, Georgia, where spring came and it was 95 degrees. And right from there, I was shipped out to Germany. A lot of my colleagues, my classmates at signal school, were being sent to Korea. And I thought I probably was going to Korea. Mm-hmm. But there were a couple of us sent to United States Army Europe. So 6 months later, I was in Germany. And there, all sorts of doors and windows opened, including the opportunity to work with special services, in addition to my signal unit. And we did, in the 18 months I was there, 6 theater productions, all of which toured. I was a touring kid. I'd been out on the road 9 months. So
you knew the road.
I knew what it took. I knew it meant staying up late and getting up early, and of course I was in the Army. I was transferred over to special services, but the deal was, I found out, I didn't know this until I went in the service, but I was an organist. My singing teacher, the last private singing teacher, was also our Methodist church organist. So she thought it would be nice, since I'd had basic piano, if I would learn to play the organ so she could solo at church, and I would play for her. There also was some question about what the nature of the relationship really was, and so the choir would just look at us fascinated as I sat at the organ playing for her, singing some exquisite, because she really had a wonderful voice. And the church attendance grew because we were sort of an island, and that's how I spent my 16th and into my 17th years. I've forgotten how I went back to her, but I had not touched the organ then when I was in Chicago. But when I was at shipped out for basic training to Fort Carson, they asked at one of our musters if anybody had any familiarity with the keyboard, because we had all these chapels at Fort Carson, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And I didn't raise my hand right away, but as a matter of fact, I didn't raise my hand at all, but I got called to the orderly room a little bit later that day, and they said, in looking through your records, we see that you've had performing arts training mm-hmm. in Chicago. Do you by any chance play a keyboard? And I said, well, sort of. I'm a singer. I don't consider myself a pianist, and I have had a little organ sold. They said, we have two services for you every Sunday. We will pay you. And I thought, pay you? And also, the nice thing about basic training, I mean, I did do KP. I did rake the gravel and in my early days, but I got a pass to be able to go to whatever chapel was closest and practice mm-hmm. because they knew I needed to practice. I could play hymns, but, you know, the special music. So it was kind of nice. I got out of some bad detail. And I thought, well, that's that. Then I went to signal school and got immediately called out when I reported in saying, we need an organist at the hospital chapel. Mm-hmm. And they have services every afternoon at 5. Mm-hmm. Well, I was off duty at 4, and they also paid. And I spent a lot of time at the hospital chapel, and I really felt good because people would come in for meditation, even when there weren't services, and you felt like you were helping people get well. So that was nice. So I thought, well, that's that. I go to Germany, and immediately your records precede you. Mm-hmm. And so I was offered right away the organist post at the base chapel. It was in Germany they call them Kaserns. Mm-hmm. And they said, we have somebody covering the chapel, but he is at another army post. And so I was the organist at that chapel, and they did not only Sundays, but holidays and other special events, and Easter and Good Friday afternoon and all of that. But when it came up that the headquarters area wanted to pull me over for special services, my battalion commander said, well, he can go, but he's got to be here on Sunday morning and at the special things, and he has to be here to be paid the last day of every month. And so I did that, and I got promoted, and my little post, and we took our shows back to the little post service club, and so I had a very good relationship with my company in the battalion, even though they only saw me on Sundays and once a month. And I did get, when we had to go to the field and qualify for our weapons, the headquarters area gave me a sedan to drive. So I didn't even have to stay in the tent. That was kind of nice. I'd done all of this, but there's no reason to keep repeating it. So the Army offered all kinds of opportunities. I also found out that they had a little civic theater, and it was comprised of officers, their wives, their daughters, some enlisted people, some people who worked for the Army who were German, and some Army school civilian people, teachers. So it was a nice little group of people, and they said, you can go over and audition. They're going to do Blythe Spirit. This was like my second day there, and I auditioned, and they cast me in the lead. And then so we started rehearsals, and then this director, I don't know where they found him, but he got mad at somebody and stomped out, and so they said, well, you have lots of experience and more than the rest of us, so you can play the lead and direct Blythe Spirit, and arranged to do all the touring out of your office, because we went to 4 service clubs, and then we would go further out. We took a lot of our shows, almost all of our plays, out to the East German border and played army posts that were pretty much lookout posts, but where they were restricted to that post. I mean, if they got leave, they had to go 100 miles away. They couldn't ever go into town. So we did a lot of nice work there. I loved that. And we did also some musical reviews. And so I met a lot of friends.
Did you have any connection with USO at
to,
that time?
To this extent, the through the courtesy of the USO, the Catholic University players came. I was there two summers and two winters. I think there, I missed a season because I was really there a little over a year and a half. So at Catholic University players, and the last, late the last summer of my last year there, the MSU players came by.
Huh.
And they were, they had two light comedies in repertory, and I was their nominal host, because that was my job with the special services office, is to be a coordinator of the incoming talent. And we had Gary Crosby up in Mannheim, and he did some shows. We had Elvis Presley up near Frankfurt, but the deal was Elvis didn't want to do any soldier shows. He was released to go back and maybe record a little bit, but he pretty much just wanted a soldier. He didn't want to be a star. So I never actually saw Elvis. He was just outside of Frankfurt in, it's either Friedberg or Freiburg. I think there's Freiburg, it was Friedberg. Freiburg is where the cathedral is. Friedberg is a little place outside of Frankfurt. So we didn't see him around there, even though we were up at the Frankfurt Playhouse quite a bit. And it was there that I saw Van Cliburn, who had just won the Tchaikovsky yeah. competition in Moscow. I didn't realize that we would become friends later on. I didn't even get a chance to speak with him then. But it was because of the MSU players, and by this time I'd had enough friends who had graduated college, mostly officers, but a couple of enlisted friends who were doing, they'd been drafted. They were out of college and they got drafted. One who now lives in California from Chicago, and another California guy. And everybody said, you really should go to college. Not that you know you're boring, but because it certifies that you yeah. you know have been through some sort of, it's all private. So
got your union card.
So I thought, well, where would I like to go? Well, maybe Northwestern. Yeah. So I wrote to Northwestern. I wrote to the University of Michigan. I thought, gee, it'd be nice to go to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. That's only in London, and I get to stay in Europe. Mm-hmm. So actually, I went up and auditioned there through some friends in the U.S. Army Historical Division. I was received beautifully and taken to a very long lunch, and I auditioned. But the bottom line was I was considered a foreigner, and they had no tuition help for foreigners. There wasn't any program like that, and I didn't have GI Bill. So, and once the MSU players came, I wrote to you to Michigan State, and a week later they wrote me back and they said, okay, we love veterans at Michigan State. We have all of these programs. If you qualify, there's aid for tuition. We have a new College of Communication Arts, which at that time, I believe, incorporated theater.
Yeah, it did. For a while.
So for a while, it was in arts and letters. It is in arts and letters, but it was in communication arts.
It was in communication arts.
Right. So I was quite impressed, and I got back in like early February, and I applied to Michigan State. I just knew, looking at the programs, at Michigan I would have been in the School of Music. At Northwestern, it would cost me 10 times the fees I was looking at, although I ultimately became very, very respecting of Northwestern and its programs through some of our mutual friends, Christine. But I came down here to audition. I went to Grand Rapids and auditioned for a show, their Summer Circle Theater, and got cast in the lead of Pal Joey. And my director was an MSU alum, and he said, oh, you're going to love Michigan State. And he said, you know, when I was there, I worked as an announcer at WKAR. So what I'd like to do is call. I know the station manager. I'll call and be nice to have you go out down and audition. So we did this right after my musical closed, which I think was in July. And I met the station manager, but the chief announcer at WKAR was Dick Estelle. And he said, we can audition you this afternoon. He said, we have a pretty tough audition. So we'll give you some time to look over the copy. And it was a newscast and a weather forecast and a couple of public service announcements. And then lists of classical composers. Because WKAR did three programs of classical music. The AM and FM station were combined. The FM station stayed on a little bit late, stayed on until 10 o'clock at night, where they did concert hall. So I did that. I was really not very good at French composers, but I just come from a year and a half in Germany. I certainly could say Mozart and Brahms and Beethoven without saying Beethoven. And besides, in Chicago, I'd been trained as an announcer by both of my acting teachers. So I could actually do commercials. WKAR didn't ask me to do a commercial. But so I did. And Dick Costello said to me after the audition, he said, "Well, you have a very theatrical voice." He said, for instance, we have the feeling that you dramatize the news. The news is read straight, and he has this beautiful voice.
Yeah.
He also trained in Chicago at the Columbia School of Broadcasting. He was impressed that I was a Chicago kid as well. Mm-hmm. But he said, for example, he said, this one line, "And when the police arrived on the scene of the accident, all of the parties were dead." He said, we don't do it that way. He said, "All the parties were dead." You know, I mean, in the weather forecast. Yeah. So he said, "But you're pretty good." He said, "We'd like to have you start right away." This is July. I wasn't going to be a student until September. And I said, "Well, Mr. Estelle, I don't have any student number. I mean, I'm sort of in limbo." And he said, "Well, we'll talk with the registrar and all of that and see if we..." So in August, I came down a month before I started as a student. I started my shifts at WKAR as a student announcer. Mm. I had to stay someplace. I had to find a room for a few weeks, and then I could move, because you had to live in a dormitory, in a residence hall. And the other amusing thing is my being a veteran meant that I could only live with other veterans. They wouldn't mix veterans with incoming freshmen.
Corruption?
Yeah, because we'd seen the world, plus veterans, you know. And besides, I was of legal age, and East Lansing was dry, and
right.
So they worried about our influence. So I had veterans in my Bryan Hall room at the complex over at Brody all that first year. It was a sort of a parade of different veterans because they didn't really stay. But by the end of 1 year, I got a letter. I had not taken college prep. My advisor, who was a theater department professor, they didn't know what to do with me. He said, "Why don't you do me a favor?" He said, "You've done more shows than most incoming freshmen, so don't do any shows for 2 years. Work on your studies, mm-hmm. get a grade point, mm-hmm. and then," because he said, "You go into rehearsal and they do a play a term," he said, "and you get into rehearsal and the studies go by the board and you don't get to the library." So I pretty much respected, he was a wonderful man, Professor Don Buell, who loved Broadway and did some programs for WKAR. Radio and also the television station. So I didn't do any shows at Michigan State my freshman and sophomore year, but I maintained my relationship in Grand Rapids. So I was in Grand Rapids every summer. And then unfortunately, the spring term, because we still were on quarters, Professor Buell died unexpectedly. And it just was when Michigan State was starting up again, maybe, but starting the Arena Theater, and I loved theater in the round, and so I did audition for the last play in the first play in the Arena Theater, the last term of my sophomore year, got in that, and thus began a whole bunch of appearances at Michigan State, and I got a letter from the Honors College saying, "Congratulations, we're very impressed with your grade point average, and we'd like to have you join," and I got another letter saying, "Congratulations, you're receiving a Board of Trustees tuition scholarship plus a Hinman Broadcasting scholarship."
Wow.
"For your other expenses." I said I didn't have GI Bill, but my mom had said, "I'll continue working while you complete college." She had gone to Argybright Business College in Battle Creek. My father had had some college, but they didn't have a four-year college graduates in the immediate family. So it was important to them, more so than me, and especially it was important to them because they thought this kid that was going to waste his life, you know, in theater, was actually going to go get a four-year degree. Excuse me. So it certainly helped when Michigan State came through with the scholarships, and I still feel indebted to both the Hinman Scholarship and the Board of Trustees. I just got Board of Trustees my sophomore year, but it was a big help, and I was working. So, and I loved broadcasting. And in my sophomore year also, I was called by a local commercial station. They'd been listening to me on WKAR, and they offered me a staff announcer job in commercial radio with air shifts that would accommodate my study. And it was just east of East Lansing, out by Meridian Road. It was then called WSWM. Today it's WFMK. And I made arrangements to buy an old used car so I could get out there. And by this time I was living off campus. And it worked out real well. I ended up being there 3.5 years. But I left WKAR on very good terms. It wasn't that I said, okay, so long. I was very grateful to Dick Estelle and to the other people there, and I learned a lot, and I loved the station. I wasn't too wild about all of the consumer information programs that we did, but mostly I didn't have anything to do with Veterans Affairs, even though I was a veteran, or the Homemaker's Hour, which was 15 minutes, or Hymns You Love, which was another 15 minutes in the morning. Or Strings in the Morning, which was generally one Handel Concerto Grosso. That was a 15-minute program. We had the Radio Scrapbook, which was Dick Estelle for many years. And we had a sort of, WKAR AM has a daylight license, so as the sun came up earlier, we did a morning program, and I would do that, called Dawn Salute. We didn't salute the dawn in October, November, December, January, February, but we saluted the dawn the rest of the year. But anyway, so I'm out at WSWM. I graduated, and Michigan State invited me to join their new performing arts company, which was an acting company primarily, and I was honored by that. But I made the mistake of not giving up my broadcasting responsibilities, and by this time I was salaried at WSWM, working for one of their major nonprofit sponsors, producing a lot of programming. So I came in first year as a grad student, and I was cast in two shows, one of which was going to tour, and I had all my broadcast responsibilities, and I kind of burned out in that very first year. And I talked with the head of the theater department, and I said, I think this is wrong. Broadcasting is my great love. As much as I'd like a degree, a master's or MFA, whatever it was to be, in theater, I think I'm just not an academic. I made another mistake like I did in high school, thinking this is not the way to go. I'm not going to be around here anyway. So I withdrew. I did one play and it toured, and I didn't actually go into the second play, and I left in that first quarter.
What? Excuse me. Which year is this now?
It was 1963 in the fall.
Okay.
I was here fall of 63.
Gaslight.
No, I had done Angel Street. In my senior year in the fall, and Of Thee I Sing in the spring.
I saw you in both of them.
The lead in the music, leads in both. And I was very, very grateful. I loved the folks here on campus, and they gave me lots of opportunities. Mentioning Angel Street and Of Thee I Sing, it looks like we did pop things, but I did Pirandello, Bertolt Brecht, Jean Anouilh, a lot of things that I would never have the chance to do, and later on through Summer Circle, even more than I never would have done any place. So anyway, I left the theater department and the performing arts company in its inception, and devoted myself to full-time broadcasting. Then I got a call from WKAR, Dick Estelle again, and he said, Ken, we have just been authorized to create a new position here, that of music program director. And he said, what we would like to do, as you know, is pull the FM station away from the AM and give it its own identity, and to make it a totally different service from AM. And I said, well, would this music program director still be responsible for the AM programs, Hymns in the Morning, and whatever it was in the afternoon? And he said, yeah, but whatever else. And so I really jumped at that chance. So I bade farewell in September of 1964 to commercial radio, came back here and started planning what ultimately became public information and fine arts format for the FM station. They made it very clear there's no budget to do this, but we are acquiring some new equipment, and what we can do is give the FM station the old equipment, because everybody, the priority was WKAR AM. Mm-hmm. That was the traditional service, and it had been, you know, it's the second or third radio station in the state, the AM station. And so we could create this other FM format, we could expand our hours, but certainly not past midnight. No, we couldn't be stereo because we didn't have any turntables that would play stereo, much less control boards that would transmit it and the transmitter and all of this. So it was like going to a yard sale and collecting. And they said, and by the way, we can't add any additional personnel, but you can use some more students. And so what we did actually is planned a format. For a station that would be on the air each day from 6 a.m. to midnight, 7 days a week, except for finals. We did a Classics by Request Saturday night program during finals 4 times a year because we had 4 quarters.